Hello, John Dennis here on Tuesday the 7th of April. Today, in Italy, a frantic search for survivors after a huge earthquake devastates the historic mountain city of L'Aquila.
There were houses throughout the old centre of the village, which is some of them going back to medieval times, which had just crumbled like biscuits.
Also today, the car industry appeals for government help after revealing a dramatic drop in sales.
This is a clear trend, and the trend is that car sales have fallen off cliff.
And why the poorest families in the UK are to receive poverty handouts from the international aid charity Save the Children.
For the last couple of years, we've been saying to government that low pay and benefits simply aren't enough to bring up children adequately in this country.
Guardian Daily with John Dennis. On guardian.co.uk.
But first, Bill Overton with today's news headlines and the papers.
At least 150 people are now known to have died after the earthquake in central Italy. Over 1,500 are injured and tens of thousands have spent the night sleeping under canvas after being made homeless. Overnight rain and aftershocks have been hampering the rescue effort. More on this later in the programme with The Guardian's correspondent in Rome. Back home, and thousands of Tamil protesters have been demonstrating in Parliament Square in London, demanding an immediate ceasefire in Sri Lanka. They're calling for an end to killings in the north of the Asian country, where government forces have encircled the remnants of the separatist Tamil Tigers and thousands of civilians. The demonstration in London went ahead without permission, with police using a policy of loose containment. One man is in hospital after throwing himself into the River Thames. It's the final day of US President Barack Obama's tour of Europe. Since attending the G20 summit in London, he's been to a NATO meeting in France and Germany and has made his first visit as president to a mainly Muslim country. In an address to the Turkish parliament, he declared the US is not at war with Islam. A new report's claiming that the legalisation of drugs could save the UK up to £14 billion. The study, comparing the costs of prohibition and legalisation, has been carried out by the drugs charity Transform. Its findings show that creating a legal, regulated market for drugs would have major benefits for taxpayers, victims of crime, local communities and the criminal justice system. And Coca-Cola is buying a 30% share in the ethically aware smoothie maker Innocent. Innocent joins a long line of companies which started out small with big ideals and then sold out to corporate giants. Ben & Jerry's was gobbled up by Unilever in 2000. A year later, Pret A Manger sold a stake to McDonald's. An eco-warrior, Anita Roddick, was criticised when the body shop was taken over by L'Oreal in 2006. Innocent's founders, though, were adamant that their principles will not be crushed as a result of the sale. Now, let's take a look at the papers and several front pages today carrying pictures of the Italian earthquake. The heavens fell in. It was like the end of the world, says The Telegraph. The Guardian focuses on the rescue effort. The grim ritual of disaster. Italy digs out quake dead, is the headline there. While The Express goes with quake warning was ignored. The Independent also picks up on reports that there'd been predictions of a quake, saying seismologist who predicted catastrophe was dismissed by official as a scaremonger. The Daily Express claims to have uncovered further evidence that members of Parliament are just out for what they can get. We fork out for MPs' food, taxpayers even subsidise their tea at just 30p a cup. Is their front page lead. The paper says MPs have limited price rises in the taxpayer-subsidised bars and cafes of Westminster to 5%, while we face increases of up to 18% in the outside world. The Mail, Mirror and Sun all lead with the story of the two boys suspected of attacking two other youngsters in South Yorkshire. The Mail says torture boys had just been grilled by police. The Mirror reports that one of the victims told his friends, "Pretend you're dead," in a bid to end the attack, while The Sun claims that the reaction of the mother of one of the suspects when quizzed by police was, "It's got nought to do with me." And finally, the Financial Times reports on the latest victims of the credit crunch with the headline, "Art prices plunge as crisis saps collectors' cash." The FT says prices were pushed down 35% in the first quarter of 2009 as collectors looked to unload works by post-war masters that had boomed along with the stock market earlier in the decade. More news and comments throughout the day at guardian.co.uk.
Rescue workers are searching for survivors after Italy's worst earthquake for almost 30 years. Dozens of people died after yesterday's tremor in the Abruzzo region of central Italy. More than 1,500 people were injured and tens of thousands have been left homeless. The 6.3 magnitude quake was centred on the medieval mountain city of L'Aquila, the regional capital. But the earthquake was felt as far away as Rome, 60 miles west. Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi declared a state of emergency. John Hooper reports from L'Aquila.
Where I am right now is away from the worst areas. I pulled off the road, but even here you find evidence of the tragedy that struck. The building just by where I'm standing is riven with cracks. There's masonry on the ground, and there's a great gash down one side of the building where the facade has been ripped away. Just a few yards away, there's a couple sitting with some of their belongings, looking bereft.
There have been earthquakes in Italy before, John. Were the authorities prepared for this?
In one sense, yes, and in another sense, no. They were prepared in the sense that Italy has a very extensive civil protection network and a highly complicated operation swung into operation very quickly. In the other sense, no. The experts say that this earthquake was entirely unpredictable and took them, therefore, utterly by surprise. Now, some of the locals don't accept that version. They say that it's quite abnormal in this area to have 20 days of tremors, which is what they say they've experienced here, and that somebody should have been telling them to get out of the area because an earthquake was coming.
And what of the rescue efforts, John? Because many people are still trapped under the rubble.
Absolutely. I have been close by in the village of Onna, just near L'Aquila, where I watched three bodies being pulled from the rubble and carted over to a field where 12 others were laid out. And when I spoke to the men from the undertakers, they said that five more had been taken away previously. The operation that was being carried out there was being carried out by rescue workers using dogs to sniff out traces of human life in the rubble. There was sophisticated lifting gear there and earth movers and bulldozers to clear away what remained of the houses that had been struck in that village, which really did look as though it had been left after some kind of aerial bombardment. There were houses throughout the old centre of the village, which is some of them going back to medieval times, which had just crumbled like biscuits.
And many of the city's 70,000 residents have fled. Is there sufficient shelter for them?
That is now the big challenge for the authorities. Some people, as you say, have fled. As I drove into L'Aquila, there were people on either sides of the road waiting to be picked up by buses. People who were sitting among, or in some cases sleeping among, their suitcases and the possessions that they had. Some of them were students from a student hostel, which partially collapsed during the night. Other people had cars, they were able to drive out of the area to avoid these aftershocks, which we're still experiencing here. But others still really have nowhere to go. And they are the ones who provide the challenge for the authorities. In another village, not far from Onna, Paganica, they've commandeered the rugby club and the rugby field, and they've started to put up a kind of tent city there. They're giving out food and water to people. But other people do seem genuinely at a loss to know where to go, like this couple who are just a few yards from where I'm speaking at the moment.
John Hooper, and there's full coverage today at guardian.co.uk/Italy. Also on The Guardian's website, Tom Cruise wants to star in a remake of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid alongside John Travolta. Is that a good idea? Have a look at guardian.co.uk/film. We look at women in sport. Over the past week, there have been British triumphs in racing, deep sea diving, and cricket. But it's still difficult for women to get involved in some sports. Read about that, guardian.co.uk/sport. Also today, The Guardian's launching a weekly financial news podcast called The Business. And you can hear the first one from 5 o'clock this afternoon, guardian.co.uk/audio. 200,000 fewer cars were bought in the UK in the first 3 months of the year. March car registrations fell nearly 30% to 300,000 cars, despite the arrival of the new 09 number plates. That's according to the latest figures from the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders, which says that new car registrations in March are a barometer of confidence in the economy. Dan Roberts, our head of business, agrees.
It is. I'm afraid it's not a very healthy barometer. It's a sort of barometer that's predicting a very nasty economic storm because they're 30% down this month. And the reason why they single out March as a particularly important barometer is that that's one of the two periods in the year when number plates change. And there's usually a bit of a spike around people buying cars so they can get a new number plate. And this is coming after several months of some pretty grim numbers too, so that's not just a blip, this is a clear trend, and the trend is that car sales have fallen off a cliff.
As you say, I mean, eye-watering figures, but not much of a surprise, I guess.
They've been trending that way for a few months. I suppose it's a stark reminder in a week when we were beginning to talk about green shoots again, that things are... still very tricky out there. I mean, the markets have had a good, the stock market has had a good few weeks. There's a little bit of positive economic data coming out of the housing market, but then every time you get something good, you get something bad back again like this. And I think it's just a reminder that actually people are still very, very jittery about making big commitments, financial commitments, and there's nothing bigger than buying a car or buying a house.
Sales of small cars and diesel-powered vehicles held up quite well in these figures. Is that because car buyers are downsizing?
I think there's probably a little bit of that. People are making, got less money to throw around, so they're buying smaller cars rather than bigger cars. I think people are also more environmentally conscious these days and are looking also at fuel efficiency from a cost perspective. And diesel is diesel cars are often very, very fuel cheaper to run.
Now the car industry wants the government to introduce a car scrappage scheme in the budget on the 22nd of April. How would that work?
Well, there's been one running quite successfully in Germany. Which basically offers, I think, around £2,000 roughly is the equivalent, would be the equivalent for people with cars over about 9 years old to encourage them to replace their old banger, basically. And it's been hailed as a win-win because the German car manufacturing industry has seen a big rise in demand. And the government is saying, German government is saying it's actually quite a green initiative because it's encouraging people to replace sort of old fuel inefficient cars with new, more efficient vehicles that emit less carbon. The green campaigners don't tend to see it that way and actually say there's an awful lot of environmental damage embedded in buying a new car from scratch. And actually fuel efficiency, although it's improved a lot in the 1990s, in recent years hasn't been improving quite as rapidly. So the difference in the emissions terms is quite small. I would expect to see quite a healthy debate about whether we should do one here in the next few days in the run-up to the budget. But I think that the jury is still out as to whether this is actually a good thing to do or not.
And what does the government think about it?
Well, the government so far has resisted. Peter Mandelson has had several opportunities to sort of be more generous to the car industry. He's been called upon to do all sorts of things. And I think one of the reasons he's being more reticent is that there's pressure coming on him from every industry at the moment for help. And although there are special aspects of the car industry, it's very, very high tech, generally a resource for engineering expertise and excellence in the country and all these things. There's no particular reason why it, rather than all sorts of other industries in similar boats, shouldn't be getting help.
Dan Roberts. Well, the car industry's grim economic news isn't the end of the story for Gordon Brown. The British Chambers of Commerce warns today that Gordon Brown will fight the general election, expected in early May next year, with unemployment still rising. The Prime Minister met the Bank of England Governor Mervyn King, the Financial Services Authority Chairman Lord Turner, and the Chancellor Alistair Darling at Downing Street yesterday. They discussed the way forward for the British economy after the Prime Minister's success last week at the G20 summit. Nicholas Watt is our chief political correspondent.
The weather seems to be getting a little bit warmer. The sun's been shining all weekend, but it's certainly not shining when it comes to the economy. And the British Chambers of Commerce will be saying today that they think that unemployment will peak in the summer of 2010. Now, the significance of that is that the general election has to be held no later than the early summer of next year. smart money is that the general election will be held next year on the same day as the local elections, which is Thursday, the 6th of May 2010, by which time unemployment will still be rising. And obviously unemployment is one of the big symbolic indicators of recession. And if people are still losing their jobs, they're still feeling insecure about their jobs, then that is not going to be great for the Prime Minister at the time of the general election.
Although in the past, Prime Ministers have won general elections, been re-elected with unemployment rising?
Well, you've been doing your homework, John, haven't you? Because the last time that a Prime Minister went into a general election with unemployment rising, that was John Major in 92. What happened? He won it, the great surprise election. And of course, Margaret Thatcher in 1983, unemployment was still running from rising from that recession in the early 1980s, and Margaret Thatcher won in 1983. Now, the government is not saying, well, ha ha ha, that means we can win. They're not being complacent at all. They are saying this is difficult, this is challenging, but there is an interesting political point there, which is that they are not, they really do not believe, genuinely do not believe, that the next general election is over. There is a feeling that David Cameron has done well, but he's not achieved the sort of cut through, the breakthrough that Tony Blair had achieved by the mid-1990s. And even though the economic news is gloomy, it's not all over. And hey, there are precedents for governments winning elections, winning re-election when times are hard.
The budget comes up in a couple of weeks, Nick. It's going to be a pretty bleak moment for Labour. How does Gordon Brown plan to capitalise on the triumph, some people are describing it, of last week at the G20 summit in London?
Well, there's very much been a gear change from ministers, from the excitement of last week at the G20. And now it's sort of, let's be realistic. The budget will take place on the 22nd of April when everyone's back from Easter. And two big things are going to happen there. Firstly, the government, Alistair Darling, is going to have to massively downgrade his forecast for economic growth. He said at the pre-budget report, which was his last major statement, that the economy would be picking up, he thought, by the end of June. Well, that's clearly for the birds. And he was hinting over the weekend that we'll be lucky to see economic recovery by the end of this year. And the second big thing that's going to happen is they're going to have to upgrade their predictions on borrowing, government borrowing. And that obviously very much plays into the Conservative idea that the government is creating huge levels of debt and these are unsustainable and that the public finances are going to be in a grim and parlous state, they say, if they win the election, by the time they win the election next year, if they win it.
Nick Watt. Still to come on Guardian Daily, you'll hear from Edlington in South Yorkshire, where villagers are coming to terms with a vicious attack on two local children.
It has been a total shock to the whole community what has happened there.
But first, 5,000 of Britain's poorest families are to receive cash handouts from the aid charity Save the Children. To start off with, £150,000 is being spent on around 900 households. It's the first time Save the Children has given cash grants to people living in the UK. But Colette Marshall, the charity's director of UK programmes, says families here are in crisis and they need the kind of support that Save the Children usually gives to people in the developing world.
Save the Children's been working on child poverty for quite a few years now. We're deeply concerned that over 3 million children here in the UK, one of the richest countries of the world, live below the poverty line. For the last couple of years, we've been saying to government that low pay and benefits simply aren't enough to bring up children adequately in this country. But what we've seen in the last 12 months is rising heating costs, rising food costs, meaning that families simply are unable to cope. So as Save the Children, we feel we should do something about that because this is a real issue that children here are facing.
And could you just give us some idea, for those of us who may not come into close contact with the poorest members of British society, give us some idea of how the recession is affecting them?
I've been speaking to mums and dads over the last couple of weeks, and a year ago they would have had, for two adults, two children, about £40 or £50 to spend on food a week, which was just about adequate. But what they found is that because heating bills have gone up, they've now got between £30 and £40 that has to cover food, travel, clothing and any items they need for their children. And at the same time, food prices have gone up. So as a mother said to me yesterday, she said, I know I should be giving my kids five portions of fruit and veg, you know, a day, but when two or three bananas cost a pound and two packets of digestive biscuits cost a pound. Which do I buy?
Now, is, say the children approaching the recession in the UK in the same way that you'd approach a crisis in another country?
Save the Children is approaching this in a fairly similar way, because what we're doing is basically giving cash handouts, which is what we would do in a situation overseas when people were struggling meeting bills or budgets. So we're offering particularly struggling families. Sadly, we know we're only sticking a finger in the dike on this issue, but we are trying to get to as many as we can reach when they've got particular large items that are going to hit them. So people've got a particular crisis cost that's coming up. We're offering to help those. Sadly, we can't help pay for food or heating bills because we just know we couldn't manage the demand at all. What we're also doing is what we do overseas as well, which is try and bring this attention to the government, because we know this is something that charities on their own can't solve.
And what action would you like the government to be taking that it's not doing already?
The government made a commitment to end child poverty by 2020 and to halve it by 2010. The government has made steps to reach that target but hasn't done enough yet. And what we'd like the government to do is recognise that this is a crisis and make sure it invests the £3 billion it needs to in the budget this month so that it hits the target in 2010.
Colette Marshall from Save the Children. In Edlington, in South Yorkshire, a savage attack at the weekend left a boy of 11 fighting for his life and his 9-year-old friend seriously wounded. The most seriously injured of the two was found at the bottom of a ravine. The younger boy was found wandering about in a daze and covered in blood. Two boys of 10 and 11 are being questioned by police about the attack. There's been widespread horror at the incident. The Prime Minister Gordon Brown said it was shocking, but he cautioned against drawing any wider conclusions about the state of society. Martin Wainwright reports from Edlington near Doncaster.
I'm with two of the councillors for the Edlington and Wormsworth ward of Doncaster. Actually, they've both been in a council meeting all this morning, but I've just caught them at home. It's Georgina and Ray Mullis. Georgina, would you mind just giving me your reaction to this awful incident?
Well, I was shocked when I heard about it, and I feel very sorry for the families of the children that's been injured, and I hope they soon make a speedy recovery. It has been a shock to the whole community, and people will have fears, but it is a one-off situation. It's not the norm.
There's not been any history of gangs of young people or that sort of thing, any more than, you know, you would have generally?
No more than normal. Edlington does have its problems, but they're kept under control.
And Ray, can I just ask you the same question?
Yes, in this case it seems that there are four children involved and not what you would associate as being a gang. They were out presumably occupying the time as best they could in what is regarded as a reasonably pleasant area to visit. It could be construed as being a little bit dangerous for children down there, unsupervised, but nonetheless, they were there, and it has been a total shock to the whole community what has happened there.
I'm with Nadia Jennings, who's a nail technology tutor. That means she teaches people how to fix those long fingernails people have. She lives in Auburn Street, which is where the younger of these two boys was found in a very distressed state and covered in blood. Nadia, would you mind just telling me what happened on the afternoon?
Well, I wasn't actually around when it happened. I actually left to go and meet some friends for lunch around about 2 o'clock. I did actually drive past Edlington Rec, which is the bottom of my road. I did drive past there around about 1:45 to go and drop my little girl off. And I didn't notice anything unusual. You know, kids playing as they normally do. It was nothing unusual. Went out for lunch, came back home around 5 o'clock. My sister very quickly came round to obviously tell me what had happened and everything else. And that's all I know, really, apart from the hearsay that has been getting said, what happened to them and things like that.
But you've got a little girl. How old's How old's your little girl, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I've got my eldest is 14, she's 15 in June, and my youngest will be 3 in July.
Right. And so does your oldest, does she go and play out in brick ponds? Yeah, and you've never had any worry about that?
No, I mean, my eldest regularly takes my youngest daughter down, actually, you know, onto the brick pond and down onto the park, onto the rec. You know, and you do assume that they're going to be safe. Kids playing and, you know, there's always a lot of parents down there as well. Adults taking the younger children onto the park. So I've never had a worry.
I've just come a few doors down from Nadia's and to another mum. Can I ask yourself your reaction to this awful incident?
Well, it's just shocking. Our child can do that to another child.
And completely out of the blue, I guess. I mean, I know we all know children can behave like this, but it's not something you wouldn't have worried about your own child going and playing out.
No, well, I don't let my child out anywhere at the yard usually. He stays in his own garden.
Right.
He stays in his own garden.
Right.
But I know one of the little boys it happened to, absolutely gorgeous little lad. You know, he's probably just took it, if you like, you know. It's just terrible. They're not from the village, who did it? And that is the worst thing.
Martin Wainwright reporting. Guardian Daily was produced today by Phil Maynard and Doug Hardy. I'm John Dennis. Thanks for listening.